Good afternoon, ladies. We are studying today the parashiyot. It's a double header again this week. There are two parashiyot again this week in the parashah of Kiddushim. I want to talk about one mitzvah specifically. There's 51 mitzvot in this week's parashah. And just in Kiddushim alone, Aharemot has also mitzvot. So there's a lot of subjects. We cannot go through all of them adequately. So I want to talk about one specific mitzvah to explain it so we understand it once and for all. And then maybe from there we can understand other things as well. The Torah is very strict when it says that it's forbidden for us as Jews to eat blood. Now, I know none of you have any desire to eat blood, and I don't have to convince you. If you were to ask me, why does the Torah say it's forbidden, I would say because it's disgusting. The Torah doesn't want people to do things that are revolting. People should not involve themselves in things that are unconscionable. Somebody's going to take blood of an animal and drink it. It's ma'us. It's despicable. But that is not the reason. Because, let's say it's not despicable. Let's say they make a new drink. A bartender makes a new drink, and one of the ingredients is a drop of blood. And it's delicious. You don't even taste it, but it's still forbidden. So even if it's glorified in a certain way, and even though there might be places in the world, like in South America, for example, where they eat blood pudding of some sort, and it's served in the fanciest restaurants, and people pay a lot of money. It's a delicacy. But the Torah says it is indeed forbidden. I hope you didn't have lunch yet. Because we're talking about things, you have to be a little, you have to have a stomach to hear some of these things. But it's okay, I won't be so graphic. Why does the Torah say dam is asur? Why is it forbidden? So I want to explain to you what the Or HaChaim HaKadosh writes. Reb Chaim ben Attar. How can I explain this to you? Every living being, whether it's a human or an animal, has a spiritual part. Human beings are the most spiritual. We have a component in our brain, somewhere around here, that's called the neshama. The neshama is a piece of God. But the neshama is made up of three parts. Nefesh, ruach, neshama. Nefesh is, again, it's spiritual. It comes from above. You cannot see it. It doesn't come up on a sonogram. It's invisible, but it's a spiritual part of human being. That's the part of human being that gives him the desire to eat, the desire to sleep. It comes from the nefesh. It's more physical, it has a physical consequence to the person. An animal does not have a neshama. Oh, absolutely not. Only human beings have neshamot. Only Jews have neshamot, if I can be more specific. A neshama is something exclusively Jewish. But I want to talk about this nefesh, even this part of the soul that we're talking about, it comes from a very, very high place. Higher than the moon, higher than the sun, higher than the solar system and the planets. It comes all the way from where God is, in the upper worlds, which is light years away. You have to know that even though It came all the way down. All the way down the pipe. All the way down to us. It's still connected to the Shamayim. There's an invisible string that connects all of our souls to a sister soul in heaven. If I'm standing in New York and my friend is standing in Los Angeles, that's 3,000 miles away, and I'm holding one end of a string and he's holding another end of the string, and in New York on the East Coast I start shaking the string, and all of a sudden it starts to make waves, the string, and it goes across the whole country. It starts to go across the from the East Coast to the West Coast. It goes all the way to Nebraska, and then it goes to Nevada, and all of a sudden my friend in California says, oh, what's going on? My friend must have shaken it. Eventually he's going to feel the movement. So too all the souls are connected to the Kisei HaKavod. There's a sister soul, and there's a string that attaches. You cannot see the string, but it's invisible. Anytime we do a mitzvah here on earth, we're creating a tremor. All of a sudden the Shamayim, the shaking, what's going on over here? What did he do, this guy? Our actions have such an impact, not only on this world. Our actions reach all the olamot, all the upper worlds. I'm sorry to tell you that our sins also create tremendous repercussion in the Shamayim, even though you don't see it. You don't even know what you did. But in the Shamayim, when the Neshama is being vandalized in Avera, so they feel that destruction in the Shamayim. Even though a person says, I don't sin, I ate some not kosher, nothing happened to me, everything looks good, the sun is still shining. But if you'd only see the damage. I'll give you an example so you can know what I'm talking about. There was many people sitting in a place. It was like a wedding ceremony of some sort. And they had a big chandelier. And the chandelier was hung to the ceiling with a rope. And they tied it from the outside of the building on top with a rope, so it's tight. And the chandelier in the olden days were made out of real fire. There was cups of oil in each cup. There's a lot of oil and wicks. Old-fashioned chandelier. And it's being hung up from the string on top of the roof. They make a big knot and they tie it. And there's one simple man. He is walking and his pants are loose on him. And he's looking for a piece of string to make a belt, a temporary belt. He's looking, looking. He can't find. He says, you know what? Maybe let me go up to the roof. Maybe there's something, somebody threw some scraps on the roof. He goes on the roof, he says, oh, unbelievable, Ishtabach Shem Olad, there's a rope over here. He says, you know what? Even though it's not my rope, but how much does the rope cost? What is it, 50 cents a rope, a dollar? I'm sure the person doesn't care if I take the rope without asking. So he rationalizes, he takes his pocket knife out of the thing, he cuts the rope, and he feels a little guilty because he's taking a rope that doesn't belong to him, but he says, okay, it's okay. And as he's putting on the rope, he hears a crash, and he hears people screaming, and he hears people saying, call the fire department, sakana. He says, whoa, what's going on over here? So he runs downstairs, and he walks and he sees an inferno, the whole place is on fire, people are trampling on each other. But I mean, so he says, I don't believe it, what happened over here? They said, what happened? Don't you see the chandelier came crashing down? The guy says, who did this? Who's the crazy person that installed this chandelier? We don't know. We can't get to the bottom of this. All of a sudden, somebody says, hey, look at this guy's belt. Where'd you get that belt from? That looks like the rope of the chandelier. He says, oh, I didn't know there was a chandelier attached to this rope. When a person makes an avirah, he speaks lashon hara, or does another type of sin, they don't see any damage. But if we were able to see what happened in the Shamayim, where you cut the string and all of a sudden things are falling all over the place and things are being turned upside down, so then we would really be a little more careful. This is the pasuk that says, Yaakov, heaven, nahalato. Yaakov, which is the Jewish person that has neshama, heaven. Heaven is a rope. It's attached to the Shamayim. An animal also has nefesh. It doesn't have neshama. It has a little spiritual component. Even animals are a little spiritual. A mother animal feeds its children and protects its children. An animal has certain senses. It knows when it's in danger. It protects itself. The animals have a certain loyalty to their master, like a dog. That comes from the spiritual part of the animal. The holy books call that nefesh bahamit, the animalistic nefesh. But even though it's spiritual, it is not connected. Only the souls of Am Yisrael have that bind to the upper worlds. Let me explain to you a Gemara. The Gemara says that there was a goy called Titus. Titus was a Roman general. Titus went into the Beit HaMikdash, the second temple. He took with him a zona, a girl, and he went into the Holy of Holies, the Kodesh Kodashim, the inner place. He took the Sefer Torah, he rolled it out on the floor, and he went Ra'aleinu v'ra'alechem and committed Avera in the Kodesh Kodashim. We cannot imagine. It's unimaginable. Such Avera. Rav Chaim Volozhin writes, that sounds like a big sin. But when a Jew commits a sin, maybe this is too strong for me to tell you. Okay, whoever wants, for the next 10 seconds, you can close your ears so you don't have to hear it. But I'm warning you, it might be a little heavy for the people. That if a person commits a sin, even in his mind, that's more damaging than what Titus did. You know why, he says? Because Titus is a dog. So it's like, imagine a dog comes into the synagogue and defecates in the synagogue. It's a cup, you throw it out, okay, clean it up, throw it out. The dog is not connected to the upper worlds. The dog's damage is limited. So he did something that's revolting, something disgusting, clean it up, throw it out. But it's a dog. It didn't affect anything beyond what you see. But when a Jew commits a avon, already the ramifications go all the way up to the olamot. It's really a compliment to all of us in the sense that look what the power we have. We don't realize how powerful we are. We think we're simple people, we're small, we're, you know, minimum effect. Oh no. The power of a Jew is godly. Just like God creates and God destroys, a Jew in his deeds can create and destroy. We have a piece of God in us. The neshama is a piece of God and it is still connected to its source. At night, when the neshama leaves us, it just meets its sister. It goes upstairs to connect itself to its root. And you have to know, every single night when a person goes to sleep, and the neshama goes back home, it doesn't want to come down in the morning. I don't blame it that much. And the shamayim, it's beautiful over there. It's like Lehavdil, in the freezing cold winter, when we go to Miami for a few days, most of the time we don't want to come home. Beautiful weather. We're coming back to freezing cold, ice storm, and the slippery roads. The neshama over here is a stranger. It doesn't belong here. It's a foreign world. It goes up at night back home. It sees all the other neshamot. It's with God. And then God says in the morning, you have to go back down to this place. Well, I don't want to go. Let me just stay here. And God fights with the neshama. You have to go back down. And the neshama comes down against its will. That's why in the morning we say, oh, thank you for Elohai, neshama shenatatabi. Thank you. Hamahazin neshamot. Nefkarim metim. Thank you for returning me the soul. We don't take it for granted. It's not an automatic. There was a struggle. Before we go to sleep, we ask God, "Biyadicha atkid ruhi." God, I'm going to give you my soul tonight as a collateral. Padita oti. But please redeem me. Don't keep it. Give it back to me tomorrow morning. Oh. So that's the soul of a human being. But the nefesh of a behemah is not connected. The nefesh of a behemah doesn't have the... Titus is a behemah. Titus is like a dog. It sounds worse than it really is. So he went into the Kodesh Kodeshim and took a Sefer Torah again, clean it up and it's over. But a Jew that commits a sin, what are you going to clean up? Already, you have to go make a reconstruction of all the olamot that were destroyed. The chandelier came crashing down, and now there's the tremendous damage. Says the Or HaHaim HaKadosh, it's from the Zohar. Where is the nefesh of an animal? The nefesh of the animal is in the dam, it's in the blood. That spiritual part of the animal is in the blood. The proof is, as long as there's blood in the animal's alive. Once it's drained from its blood, the animal cannot exist, even though it has all the other body parts. The Torah says, "Ki hadam hu nefesh." The dam is the nefesh. So he says, when a person eats the blood of an animal, he transfers his nefesh that's connected to the nefesh of the behemah. He has now cut himself from the source and he has downgraded his connection to nefesh behemah. It's got nothing to do with disgusting or not disgusting. And that's why the punishment of eating dam is karet. Karet is his soul becomes cut off. Because now that you ate dam, you have nefesh behemah. Nefesh behemah is... It's a spirituality of some sort. But he loses his connection. That's why our tradition tells us that we must salt the meat before we eat it. Because we must get rid of the blood. You are what you eat. You eat nefesh behemah, you have nefesh behemah. But I want to explain you a little deeper. That means neshamot, which are spiritual, never expire. Neshamot live on forever. People die. Neshamot can never die. Neshama is God. God is eternal. There's a part of us that is eternal. On the day of death, 120 years, we say in Lashon HaKodesh, we don't say a person died. We don't say met. We say niftar. Niftar means there was a something that was connected, something that was united. And niftar means it departed. There was a departure. Departure of what? The soul just departed from the body. But the soul remains to live forever and ever. And there have been many stories from the Talmud to the testimony of the Goyim to modern day history of neshamot. After they left this world, they continued to communicate with the people in this world. Are you familiar with this concept? For example, there was a great rabbi called Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. When Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was the rabbi of the Mishnah, he died. Every Friday night he would come to his house and make Yiddush for his family. Until the maidservant, she got all excited. Imagine Rabbi Yehuda Nasi would come Friday night, Sabri Maranan. And then maybe he would give blessings and he would go back upstairs. So the maid servant got all excited. She would tell the neighbors, you believe what's going on here? Every Friday night, the Bihudah comes back. Oh, he says, she's telling everybody, I'm not, the word got out, I'm not coming back anymore. But you see, Neshamot definitely were able to appear. The Gemara tells a story about a rabbi called Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman had some workers in his backyard. They were digging. All of a sudden, as the workers were digging, the fellow said, stop digging over here. What is stop? Who's talking? So he said, my name is Abahai by the Yoshiyah. Why? The dead guy's talking to him. Don't dig over here. So he ran into court of Nachman. Nachman, some guy's talking from the ground. So he went into the ground and he says, who are you? I'm Ravaha. He said, but it's impossible. Our rabbis taught us that when a person dies, his body decays. How are you still able to talk? Not only are you able to talk, but he said his body is intact. Rav Nachman felt under the ground, and he felt the guy's body was intact. He died many years before. He said, how is that possible? So he told them, Shlomo HaMelech says, those people that never get jealous in their life, their bones never, their flesh never decays. He said, I never got jealous. I was never envious. Wow. He's talking to him, saying the Divrei Torah, everything. He said, but are you really dead? Yeah, I am dead. But you're not dead, you're talking. Why don't you come out? Come upstairs with me. He said, I can't. Don't you know anything? I'm not allowed to come out till Mashiach comes and he'll resurrect me. But until then, we cannot. We're not in control of coming out when we want to come out. Yeah, the rabbi's talking to some guy that's buried in the ground having a whole conversation with him. So it is possible that neshamot do communicate with the living. There are many stories of people that have dreams where they see the deceased that come to them in a dream and give them messages or signals or advice of some sort. This is a reality. So again, this is very important to know this. This is one of our principles. Neshamot are eternal. The Navi tells a story of Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech wanted to go to war, but he didn't know if he's going to succeed or not. He went to ask the Kohanim, no answer. He asked God, no answer. He had no choice. So he went and did what the Torah says you're really not supposed to do. He went to a witch, a Mechashefa. And I don't want to talk today how Shaul let himself do this, because it's a big question. There's many opinions. Some say he was wrong, some say he was right. And he told the witch, I need to talk to Shmuel HaNavi. Shmuel HaNavi is dead, bring him down. I need to ask him a question. Why? And all of a sudden she did whatever she did, all of a sudden Shmuel's soul comes down, upside down. And Shmuel tells Shaul, yes, you called me? You scared me after death. I didn't know it was you calling me. So the Gemara says, what was he scared of? He says, Shmuel was lying in the heavens, wherever he was lying. All of a sudden, he gets a call, you're wanted. He says, Shemai said, probably they want me in Bet Din. They want to probably judge me again. I thought God was calling me, that he wants to, maybe they found some sins that I committed, and now they want to punish me. So I went up to the Bet Din. He says, I didn't go up to the Bet Din. I went to where Moshe Rabbeinu was sitting, and I told Moshe, please, Bet Din wants me. You got to help me. You got to be a lawyer for me. I got the best lawyer in the Shamayim, Moshe Rabbeinu. And I bring Moshe Rabbeinu up. God says, what are you doing here? Didn't you call me? No. It wasn't me. Shaul's calling you down on earth. Go down there. He says, oh. So when he came down to show, he said, you scared me after death. You're calling me like this. Namahir Gastani. Shaul HaMelech tells Shmuel, listen, now that you're here already, I need to know. Shall I go to war? He says, yeah, you're going to go to war, but tomorrow you're going to die. You're going to be with me. And sure enough, the next day Shaul died, him and his three children, exactly like Shmuel predicted, he was with him, meaning in the Shamayim. So you see, death is a departure. It's not a finality. It's just a separation of soul and body. are many stories of whether it's the Arizal or the Gaon Mevilna, the Hafez Chaim, that have conversed with souls. In certain times it's permissible, certain times it's forbidden. I wouldn't recommend anybody using Ouija boards and all this type of voodooism, but there's ways that are clearly asur from the Torah. You don't have to be a mikubal. The stories of the Israeli soldiers in the army, sometimes when there wasn't too much war, they'd be on the border for months at a time. It gets boring. There's no action. At night, they would play around with this type of stuff. It's forbidden. And they would bring souls down, ask them questions. And I heard from soldiers that were not religious telling me, you don't have to be a big... there's a way to talk to neshamot. To talk to the souls. And neshamot. I once told you a story. I'll repeat it only because... I can't tell somebody else's story because I don't know if it's true or not. My story, I know it's true. One time, I gave a series of lectures of shiurim in a synagogue in our community. They told me they want to pay me for it. And they said how much they want to pay me. Okay, I accept it. The series was finished, and I didn't pursue it, and they certainly didn't pursue it, and they never paid me, but I had forgotten about it. 2, 3, 4, 6 months had passed. I saw one of the members of the committee. He came to me and said, Rabbi, you don't give shiurim anymore? Why? No, it was only really a series of 8 classes, that's all it was supposed to be. By the way, did they ever pay you? I said, don't ask. They didn't pay me, but kaparat avonot, he got all nervous. What? They didn't pay you 6 months? I didn't even say anything. Said, it's not worth anything already. I gave up on it already. Am I going to go fight for a few dollars? He said, I'm embarrassed. How much they owe you? Said, they owe me $1,000. That's all they're talking, $1,000 they're making you. He says, I'm going to pay you myself. I said, no. You should pay me? He says, no. I'm on the committee. Don't worry, I'll get the money back from the committee. Let me just pay you. He took out of his pocket, all I have is 500. He said, here's 500. I owe you the other 500. Don't worry, I'll get it to you. No. He runs around. I'm not accepting. You have to take it. A few months later, that fellow died. For a different reason. Nothing. Not because he gave me the $500. He died because of a different reason. Anyway... Even though that kills people sometimes to pay money, but he didn't die from that reason. Anyway, he paid me. He died. In the back of my brain, I said, Hazit, I feel bad that he died, but there goes my $500 also. One morning when I was in the Bet Knesset, an old rabbi, he's no longer alive today, old rabbi, he said, Rabbi Eli, can I talk to you in the office, please, privately? He comes in the office. The rabbi takes out an envelope from his pocket. He says, this is yours. What is it? I open the envelope. I see $500. So, Hakam, what is this from? Doesn't the shul owe you this money? It's impossible that you can know about this. There's only one person that knows about it. And he's not here anymore. He said, I don't know anything, but all I know is this lady had a dream on Friday night. This fellow from the Shamayim came to a dream and said, I owe the rabbi $500. I gave him my word. Go pay him. She woke up. She doesn't know what this dream is. She went back. He came again in the dream. I'm not joking. She tapped her husband who's on the committee of that shul and said, what is this guy saying? He investigated, and sure enough. So, you see that the neshamot, he gave me his word. He came back. I went to the committee after that. I said, that's what you have to do to get paid. You have to bring a guy from the Shamayim, has to come all the way down. You couldn't just pay me regularly. You had to interrupt the whole Shamayim to bring a guy down to testify. But that's what happens sometimes. So, you see, there is something there that's a little relieving, that when somebody dies, you have to know he didn't really die. They just changed location or changed forms. Instead of being physical, so now they're spiritual, but they're still aware of a lot of things, but they're just in the Shamayim, they're just in a different place. The soul does not expire. The soul lives on forever. But you have to believe, this is part of our belief system, that there will come a time where the neshamot will come back down into the bodies and the dead will be resurrected. There will be tehiyat metim. The dead people will come back. This is something that we have to look forward to. This is something that we have to be very anxious. We have to be very excited for. That whoever it is that passed away, at the end of time, whether it's Mashiach, I don't know exactly when it's going to happen, but it will happen that all of a sudden, on one day, the neshamot are going to return to the body. That's why the halakha says we bury our deceased with clothes on. Isn't that strange? What do you have to bury them with clothes on for? It's called shrouds, but it's clothes. Why? Underneath the ground, there's nobody there. What do you need to get dressed up for? Where are you going? The body is under the ground, and the Shema goes up. So what do you need to dress it for? Because at the time of the resurrection, it would be embarrassing if a person is resurrected without clothes on. So already at the time of the burial, we're preparing for the resurrection. And you know how many millions and millions of people are going to come back? You think there's going to be enough tailors to tailor clothes now for a million people in one day? Huh? Where are they going to park? So all these questions are actually fair. They're valid. Where are they going to park? Where are they going to live? Where are they going to go? These are all questions that only the Mashiach can answer. Especially, it gets more confusing when everybody's going to move to Israel. Where's everybody going to fit all these neshamot? But we'll leave that up to God. It's not for us to worry. But we say in the Tefillah three times a day, and you must say this with full conviction. V'ne'eman atah lahayot metim. And we are depending on you that Borei Olam, you will resurrect the dead. And that's what we bury with shrouds on. Because we're anticipating that time. And you have to know something else. That sometimes a person was not zocheh to a burial. A body is on the bottom of the ocean. Or lo aleinu, the people that were in crematoriums, where their body just is scattered across the world. God is called Mizareh Yisrael. God collects all the particles of that person, no matter where they are in the world, and at the time of the resurrection, those particles come all together, Marbaka Fotaris. Not only do they come together, but the particles of that person, there's no mixture. Everybody gets exactly the part that belonged to him. Even though he's over here one place, and the other part is in China, across the world, underneath, and the wind blew it, and God knows exactly the spot. And not only does he know the spot, but when he brings it back, it returns to the exact spot that it was when he was alive. That means if this piece of dust was part of his eye, it'll go back to the exact spot where his eye was and to the exact location in the eye where that piece of dust was. Do you know how much millions of people we're talking Ishtabasta when you start to think about how the resurrection takes place? How God knows between each piece of dust who it belongs to, where it is, which body part. So there's not going to be any confusion. Picture it so you can have a little understanding like a magnet. If there's metal pieces in the dirt, and I take a magnet, I just put it next to the dirt, all of a sudden the magnet draws the pieces out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a magnet for every single human being. His own magnet. So he puts the magnet, so to speak, and all those parts come all the way back to where they're supposed to be. This is going to be a tremendous Yom Tov. It's going to be something remarkable, the day of Tehayat HaMetim. Who can imagine what it's going to be like? And it's going to happen. It's going to happen soon, Be'ezat Hashem. Oh, this is all good questions you're asking. Some Sefarim say that the body comes back as it was in its prime. Which body? You know much more than me, obviously, from that question. I don't know about Gilguls and all these other... Ladies, you know what? How about... Everybody will ask their local rabbi all these difficult questions. No. Ask somebody much wiser that knows these things. I'm just giving you the general principles. Now, on this subject of the Tehillat HaMetim, I want to read from you from a sefer of a rabbi called Rabbi Agassi. Shimon Agassi was from the great rabbis of Babel. So he says the following. Oh. An example. If somebody were to ask you, prove to me that there's a resurrection, what would you tell them? So you tell them a story, you tell them, prove to me that there's going to be. So our rabbis tell us that when God created the human body, it says in the Pasuk, "Mebesari ehazeh Eloah." From my body, I can understand God. The body is a microcosm where you could understand many things if you just study the human body. Somebody asked me this week a question, and this is what I answered them, before I get to what the rabbi says here. Why is it that when a child is born, he has baby teeth, and then the baby teeth fall out, and then he grows new teeth? How come it doesn't happen to a person's nose? He has a baby nose, and then his nose falls off, bar minnan, and then he grows a new nose. Why only by the teeth? I mean, why does this happen? So I said, I'm not going to answer you why it happens to the teeth, but I'm going to explain to you why God made such a thing in the human body that it has to fall out and regrow. Why does the teeth just grow with the person's mouth? And the explanation is because God wanted to prove to us that there's a resurrection, that there's Tehillat HaMetim. If you think about it, feel your gums. The gums are basar, it's flesh. It's nothing. And all of a sudden, one day, the child is crying, and the mother sees the child is all cranky, and she takes the back of a spoon, and she goes to the children's gums, tick, 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 what? She is like a rock. Something's growing out of a piece of flesh. From where did this rock come out of? What do you think? You think the teeth are hiding in your chin? If somebody would open their chin, you think you'd see a rack of teeth lying around? No. Where does it come from, the teeth? From where does it, all of a sudden, the tooth starts coming out of nowhere? It grows out of a piece of gum, flesh. Wow. So the tooth comes out, And the mother's excited, they make a party, the first tooth. I'm not saying you should make a party, but they make a party. They get all excited, the first tooth. They give it some sweets. And then, all of a sudden, the tooth falls out. Oh, they make avilut. The tooth died, the tooth came out. And that's it. And you look, you don't see anything. It's finished. And the child comes to the mother, Ma, what's going to happen now? Don't worry, another one will come out. There's another one going to come out of. It was a miracle already that the first one came out. You can tell me lightning is going to strike twice? Don't worry, it'll come out. Don't worry. You're not the first one to have a tooth that fell out. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, not only does a tooth come out, but a bigger tooth and a more productive tooth. This is resurrection. This is Tahiyat HaMetim. So if you could, you see it with your own eyes, 32 times it happened to every person. The teeth fell out and the teeth regrew. And therefore, that's not a small. So the same God that can resurrect your teeth. A teeth is part of the body, so you can resurrect the whole body as well. So nobody should say, oh, it's outrageous, I never heard such a... You see it every day when a baby's tooth falls out. And you tell the child, this is Tahiyat HaMetim. See, just like the tooth came out. All the deceased people, the grandparents, the great-grandparents, the great tzaddikim, and the great hakamim. What a simcha it's going to be. Could you imagine on that day, everybody's going to be running in the cemetery looking for their loved ones. It's going to be a reunion like you can't imagine. It's too overwhelming to even think of such a simcha. And we say in Pasuk in Tehilim, Samehenu kimot anitanu. That as much pain as a person goes through as a result of death, but the simcha is going to be that much greater because of the anticipation, because of the yearning of it. You're going to have families all over, everybody's going to be walking around with a smile, everybody's going to be walking around with great, great joy. It's going to be a time of tremendous, tremendous jubilation. And our rabbis want us to say in the Amidah again, V'ne'eman ata l'hayot metim. And anybody that, God forbid, doesn't believe in the resurrection is in contempt of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He has a deen of an apikoros and a mean, which is the worst thing a person could be, and he will not be resurrected. You cannot deny it and then take advantage of it. If you believe in it, you get the advantage of it. But you cannot say, oh, shtuyot, what kind of crazy thing, I don't believe. So, be very careful to make sure that we have belief in this. Now one word from the great rabbi. He says like this. Oh. La'olam ena neshama chozeret letoch haguf ba'et ha'techiya אלא בארץ ישראל דווקא, ולא בחוץ על הארץ. Oh. Really, the primary place of Tichayat HaMetim is in Eretz Yisrael, in Israel. That's where the neshama comes into the body. ומתי חוץ על הארץ הזוכים לתחייה, but those that are not buried in Israel, what's going to happen to them? So he says, "Hine lachash nitrakem gufam." God's going to put their bodies back together again. V'niglam nichnas po hayut ksat. God's going to put a little spirituality into them, just enough to get them up, but not the full voltage. Ad kedish yichlu la'amod al raglehim. They're going to stand up. V'nelech derech mechilot. They're going to walk underneath underground tunnels from here all the way to Eretz Yisrael. And once they get to Eretz Yisrael, then the neshama is going to be put into them in Eretz Yisrael. Lachen, the rabbi's advice, yishtadel kol adam nekbawa dirato be'Eretz Yisrael. A person should go live in Israel. Lefachot le'ed zikanuto. At least when he gets older in his years, because a person wants to end up in Israel, because that's where the... Who wants to go in the tunnels now? We get scared going into the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel for 6 minutes, we're scared. Now you're going to have to walk from here to Eretz Yisrael in a tunnel? Shema Yisrael. It's a big zichut to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, there's no question about it. Kol ha-kofer b'tchayat ha-metim. Anybody that denies any of this that we said today. Anybody that denies not only the concept, but all these details that I told you. What do you mean? How does God know every piece of dust? Where? Anybody that denies any of these conditions that we said? Sho'amer, she'en ha-metim atidim le'chayot. O afilu sho'modeu ma'aminu. He said, no, they will. Ela sho'amer, she'en nat tehayat ha-metim menem ezbatorah, or it's not written anywhere. הרי זה נקרא כופר ואינו קם בתחיית המתים ואינו חלק לעולם הבא וכל המאמין, whoever believes in it, הוא זוכה לעמוד לקץ הימין ולראות בטוב השם ארץ החיים. So you see over here, at the time of the departing of the neshama tells the body, don't worry, I'm coming back one day, just stay over there. So there's a reunion as well, just like we have a reunion with the deceased. The body itself sees the neshama, Baruch Abba, you're back. And then the world has a different way of, we're going to see Avraham Avinu, you're going to see Yitzhak Avinu, but Yaakov Avinu, you have to merit it. You have to merit it. I conclude with one point. There are certain avonot that if a person commits these avonot, he can lose his chance to be resurrected. One of these avonot, for example, the Gemara says, is somebody that charges interest, a loan shark. A Jew is not allowed to charge interest to his neighbor. He could lend money, but it has to be a fair exchange. $100 loan, you get $100 back. But those that charge interest to a Jew, the Gemara says they don't wake up. I have a reason for that. I'm not going to tell it to you today, but I'll tell you one funny story. It's not so funny, but it's funny. One time there was a loan shark, a Jewish guy. He died. The whole life he charged interest. His children came to bury him in the cemetery in the Havra Kadisha. So the burial society said, okay, you have to pay for the grave. We're willing to pay. How much is the grave? So they tell him, $500,000. $500,000? That sounds a little expensive for a grave. Is that what all the graves cost? No. Normal grave costs $1,000. $1,000. But we're not taking less than $500,000. $500,000, this is usury. You're a bunch of crooks. So the children took the burial society to the judge, to the rabbi. What kind of business is this over? $500,000? The rabbi said, pay it. They're right. Pay it. What's the logic, rabbi? He said, why is a grave so cheap? Because it's a temporary place. Eventually, you're going to come out. But your father charged interest. This is a permanent resident. This is not a condominium. This is a permanent resident. He's never coming out. Therefore, you have to pay up front. You have to pay for the permanent residence. Therefore, we have to be very careful, not only on that, to make sure that we earn Tehayat HaMetim. Ladies, I wouldn't worry. Whoever comes and studies Torah, the Torah resurrects. The Torah has a certain light. It's the light, or Torah Mehayehu, the light of Torah brings life. ואתם הדבקים באדוני אלוהיכם, חיים כולכם היום, אמן ואמן.